Leafs Nation, we are here. Playoff preview.
We are at the cusp of a new era.
I like waiting. that we're getting to this a little early, Tim. I don't see anyone else coming out with their playoff previews yet. It's like a week and a half away. It's time. Let's get into this.
It's time. We're beating the market. Tell all your friends. You want to know the scoop on the Tampa Bay Lightning? Tune in to the Leafs cast.
We're just going to be listening to all the other news outlets copying us now and what our scoops are, because we're the right ones. We're the ones who push the news.
The other podcasts are just going to be talking about the meaningless games are being played now, and we get into the meat of what's important.
Well, it's been a long season. I don't think that there's several things that happened this year that if you told me that they were going to happen 74 games ago, I would have said you're crazy. Like that Matthews and Nylander would be basically tied for goals and our team lead, and that we still don't know who our number one goaltender is, kind of injury aside this point of the season. But maybe we talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if you told me that Matt Murray would be injured 74 games in the season, I would have believed you.
Yeah, we're not going to get too much into the games here on this pod. We got other more important stuff to be talking about. But of great importance in just our most recent game against Detroit, complete fluke, accidental, kind of like a slew foot. Raymond kind of slides into Murray from behind, knocks him out at the knees, and head comes crashing to the ice. It's always a scary thing when you see that. I don't believe at this moment we have a firm update on Murray or what his status is. I think that everyone just kind of accepts or expects he'll miss some time because of this. But once again, Matt Murray is unavailable due to injury. To no fault of his own, but guy just can't catch a break.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit unfortunate. Granted, if it was Corey Perry that blew a tire and took out Murray's knees, it's like I might not give him the benefit of the doubt. But it is, like, seeing that, it does kind of annoy me. Like, these goalies, they have basically no, like, you ever see the back of a goalie helmet? It's the thinnest layer of foam. It's like, how hard is it to put a real actual amount of protection there?
Well, it's the kind of thing that, you know, you saw it when Mikheyev got his wrist slashed by the skate, and then he came back, and now he wears those guards over his wrist, like the extension of the glove. And you just think, yes, obviously. Like, obviously. You got skates flying around. Of course you're going to wear. Everyone in the league should be wearing this thing. Now I hear when Evander Kane got his wrist cut, when he came back, he refused to wear the thing. So I guess not everyone wants to choose to.
All right, every sane player is deciding to wear these things, but.
But I agree with you, Tim. It just seems like, you know, what if that was Samsonov that happened to? What if that was Andrei Vasilevskiy for the Tampa Bay Lightning? Like, it's just you go from having a shot to win the cup to basically you're relying on Brian Elliott to get you there, which you never know, it is Tampa Bay. But, I don't know. You can't really blame the equipment manager. How often do guys, do goalies fall backwards and hit their head? It rarely happens, but it's you just feel bad for him. It's not like his body's weak. It's not anything he did. It's not like he was being Binnington over there picking fights with guys. Like, it just happened. He's out again. Props to Kyle Dubas for bringing in Samsonov after bringing in Murray, recognizing that, hey, Matt Murray might not be healthy and ready to go, even if you want him to be your starter. And I guess he might be. We don't know what the extent of his injury is.
But yeah,
I think this has kind of sealed the deal that it's going to be Samsonov game one.
Yeah, we'll see. The thing about concussion risk is that you always have to give it for a few days to see, do the symptoms come forward? Like, concussions are really weird to test for, which is why there's always a bit of gray cloud about it. But we'll wait and see. Hope for the best for him. Hope that he is healthy.
Part of the problem, though, is that, like, some players come back from injury and they could just hit the ground running and all of a sudden they're great. Like Matthews, we see him do it. O'Reilly just came back from a big injury and he was great. I fully expect him to be just hit the ground running when he comes back soon. I think this week he's coming back. But Matt Murray is the opposite. Games past, like, it takes him a while to get up and going here. And if he misses any time, he's not going to have a while to get up and going. It's going to be playoffs and then he's probably not even going to see the ice. So it's not great. That's all we're going to talk about for that, because I don't even think we're going to get into Matt Murray, who we're going to call our backup goaltender, because We're taking a deep dive from here on out into the first round matchup between the Toronto Maple Leafs and now confirmed Tampa Bay Lightning. We've known it for about 50 straight games now that the Maple Leafs will be playing Tampa in the first round. The only question was who's getting home ice advantage, which I guess is technically still up in the air.
Oh, but confirmed. Curtis Joseph was not the emergency pub.
He was not. I didn't think he was.
I was got by the internet.
Internet, you got him. You got
to. You got me.
We are confirmed facing Tampa Bay. It is a rematch of last year's first round matchup. Tim, just before we get into our deep dive, how does that make you feel? We've kind of suspected it for a long time. We've kind of known it for the last number of weeks now. But now it's locked in. We are for sure facing Tampa Bay. How do you feel?
I feel a little bit like this was inevitable. Like, we're having a chance to, you know, exercise our demons from last year. Like, it reminds me a lot of the when we faced Boston in back-to-back years and went back-to-back game seven losses. But we're not there yet. But I mean, we say it was inevitable, but back at, I think the halfway point of the season was basically when Boston started to run away with it. What we kind of came down to is like, are we going to have home ice advantage? This is what we have to play for in the second half. And we 4 points up with 6 games to play. So we've put ourselves in a good position. Just have to close out the year, not, you know, knock on wood, Tampa could win 5 in a row to close out the year, but
it's just overall the part that annoys me is like, this is the best team over the last 10 years in the NHL. Like, that far not the best team over the last 5 years, at least. Like, they made it to the cup final 3 years in a row. They won 2 of them. Like, this is the team that we face in back-to-back seasons. And then after that will be the Boston Bruins, probably. It's just that part still frustrates me that the Leafs can't just catch a break. But we had a break when we faced teams like Montreal and Columbus, and we squandered them. So you get what you get, and you get eliminated in the first round. But maybe not this year. So what we're going to do, Tim, is we are going to move down several, I guess, tiers of the Maple Leafs and Tampa Bay roster, directly comparing them against each other to determine who has the edge. We obviously know that this is going to game 7, and that'll be decided by a single goal, most likely. But who on paper, who at this moment, with 7 games left to go of the regular season, do we think have the edge? Are you ready to go, Tim?
Let's do this.
All right, starting out, we're just calling them the big boys, because where else would you start? And this, what's so fun about the Toronto-Tampa series is that they're so upfront loaded with talent. Some of the names on these rosters are just so fun to watch. Specifically for the Maple Leafs, we're going to be looking at 3 players here: Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. These are undoubtedly our 3 best players. Like, they're just elite talent. Any one of them could break a game open at any point. And the same could be said about the 2 players I'm going to bring up on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Kucherov and Point. Just to put it in perspective, Kucherov has 106 points, which is 11 more than Mitch Marner, who leads our team. And Braden Point has 48 goals. He's looking to become a 50-goal man for the first time in his career. That's 11 more goals than anyone else on our team. So they have 2 players who have a significant amount more points than anyone on our team, and another player who has significantly more goals than anyone on our team. What do you think about that matchup, Tim?
I mean, quick note on the Leafs big boys. I think this year is probably the first year, like I would say even last year, if you say who are the Leafs' top 3 forwards, you would put John Tavares in that conversation. But this year, like, I think Tavares has had like a solid season, but it was really William Nylander taking quite a step forward this year. Granted, he spent more time playing with Matthews this year than in past years, which I'm sure has a factor, but I would say like these are the 3 biggest forwards for the Leafs. And I think, I know you were kind of talking about difference of points and goals. I just see that, you know, Braden Point, clearly a puck hog if he's getting all those goals. No, these are the elite, some of the elites of the NHL going against each other. Like, all the, like, the 4 of these guys will get some like Hart Trophy votes probably, or like perennial talks about the major awards. So I don't know, if I had to pick like who has the edge, I do like that. I think, I mean, we'll get to this point once you start talking about defense and goalies, Tampa's more balanced. But I think on the forward edge, certainly when it comes to star power, the Leafs have the edge with the three guys of being, not sure you want to say quantity over quality when it's three guys compared to two, but if you're comparing them pound for pound, the top three guys, William Nylander is definitely better than the third best forward on, well, yeah, better than Steven Stamkos. We'll get to that. Steven Stamkos is taking a little step back, but
I kind of disagree, Tim. I'm looking at this and yeah, it's not a direct comparison because it's three guys to two guys here. We're just talking about the top end of both teams. But Kucherov and Point they deliver in the playoffs, man. Like Point especially, that guy is just money in the playoffs. And our guys haven't been that. And these are like, but both of them, if they were on our team, they would be the best two players on our team this year, just purely based on points that they're getting. So I kind of think like if there was one, because you could only play the guys who are out on the ice, and if Point and Kucherov are out there on the ice together, I think that's the best pair of guys that are going to be out there. Now, Matthews has had a down season and has really been turning around lately. So I don't put it past Matthews at all to be the best player on the ice during the series. Or Marner. Or Nylander, maybe. Like, any one of them could do it. But if I'm just going by how their performance has been for this season, it's been consistent all year long for both Point and Kucherov. And they've done it for 3 years in a row in the playoffs, game in, game out, for 12 rounds they've played in. Can you imagine that, playing in 12 rounds over 3 years, Tim? You can't. But they can because they've done it. That's what they do. So I'm scared of Point and Kucherov. I think that they're the kind of guys that Vasilevskiy's going to back up the back end, and Point and Kucherov are going to get goals, and that's all you need to win.
That is true. You take the playoff performances into it, and the fact that we are looking at the playoffs, and like if it's overtime of the playoffs, I would give them the edge. And you know, it's not just because the recency bias of the Leafs losing in overtime against Florida, but I don't know, Matthews and Marner though, those two together can make magic. Like those guys, I know they haven't done it in the playoffs in the past. They've always, for whatever reason, hit roadblocks, but those guys, when they're on and they have the chemistry, they can take over a game. Like though they we always talk about, do you notice them every time they're out on the shift, either together, like do you notice every time they're on the ice? And often if you lose track of the players, you'll see someone make an amazing passing play and you instantly know that's Mitch Marner. You see someone put the puck over the glass in the playoffs, you know that's Mitch. Oh wait, no, that's not my point. But poor Mitch. Maybe
at the same time, Tim, like Mitch Marner's been great all season long. He's been our best player all season long, game one to game 78 or whatever we're at right now. Kucherov's been better. He's been 10 points better than Mitch Marner all season long. And like for the beginning of the season, Nylander was so good and Matthews was kind of struggling. And now Matthews is so good and Nylander's kind of struggling. But neither of them are as good as Point. Like, that's what I'm saying. Though, if when you have game breakers, we haven't seen a part over the past 76 games where both Matthews and Nylander and Marner have all been going at the same time. So you kind of hope that they're just all of a sudden going to be going all of them together in the playoffs, because that would be great. If all three of them were going, then yeah, they could out firepower Point and Kucherov. But if only one or two of them are going, I fully expect both Kucherov and Point to be going, because they're always going. So it kind of depends on how many of our guys can figure it out.
Maybe. I mean, you talk about being better. Like Kucherov, I think like having more points is necessarily seeing better. Like Kucherov doesn't play almost every single penalty kill like Mitch Marner does. He doesn't play the amount of minutes that Mitch Marner does.
No, you're right. That's a good point.
So like I would say Mitch Marner is a more well-rounded player. Granted, like if there's someone that you need to put on the ice to get a goal, you'd be hard pressed to find someone better than Point and Kucherov. So,
yeah.
But I think it comes down to like these guys, like at the very top end, like we saw in the series last year, it is pretty even. It's going to come down to which player wants it more, which player happens to get hot in the series. But like, any one of those guys can take over a series if they want. I mean, William Nylander, I think like he's probably the most polarizing player of the Leafs for the last little while. Maybe Justin Hall for different reasons, but William Nylander showing that like he can take over a game when he wants to.
Yep. It's what scares me is that for so long we've been saying we will live and die on the top three. Either they deliver or they don't deliver. And I'm not even sure if our top players are better than their top players. So it's scary stuff. I think that best like optimistic point of view is that this is a coin flip here. And the winner will be decided by the pieces lower in the lineup, which I guess we'll find out if that's good news or bad news pretty soon here. But Tampa's big boys are no slouch. All right, next.
No, and
go ahead.
I was going to say, it is interesting like comparing Toronto and Tampa specifically just because the teams are constructed so similarly and play such a similar style as well. Like Leafs have invested a little more money into all the forwards. Tampa's invested a little more money in
a lot more money
defense, a lot more money in goal and goaltenders. Yeah. But overall, these are teams that are very top heavy with their stars. And then they fill in the fringes with depth guys.
And another similarity that they both have is their captains of their team, John Tavares and Steven Stamkos, is our next topic, Tim. The vets, we're calling
them. The leadership factor.
These guys are so similar. Stamkos has played one more game. They have the same amount of goals. Stamkos has four more assists. And they're like both locker room classy guy, like captain.
Canadians.
Canadians or Europe, like these guys, they're just the same player. Do you see either team having an advantage between Stamkos and Tavares, or is it just they cancel each other out here?
I mean, similar with the Tampa's stars, like you look at who is the better playoff performer, and it's hard not to look at Steven Stamkos. Like, even though I know the one playoff series of the year they won the cup, like he missed most of it. Except for the 3 minutes of ice time where he came in, scored a goal, and then left. John Tavares, I mean, like he's had like okay playoffs of. We won't talk about Montreal. I can't handle that. I was just looking for his playoff stats.
I'll fill in there while you're Googling. I think that they are basically just. Coin flip here between the two of them. I think they're both going to contribute about the same. Tim, you mentioned to me a little bit ago that John Tavares has been a power play master. He scores so many goals in the power play, but has been non-existent in the power play score sheet in the playoffs throughout his Leafs tenure. And that could change. I have a really good, we're going to talk about our power play later on, but I have a really good feeling about our power play. I was just thinking about it the other day. And we've just been pretty consistent all year long. And I think that we're going to keep trucking along here at the power play. Well, I think Tavares is going to get some good greasy ones. Bunting might get some. Like I don't know. I think that the power play is something that might propel Tavares ahead a little bit. I don't really know what percentage of power play goal Stammer's production comes from there. But I think if anything, I'd give the edge to our boy JT. But it's nothing written in stone. That's a pretty close call.
Yeah. Pretty close call. I mean, maybe I'm jumping the gun before we start talking about the depth, the rest of the forwards, but even both like Toronto and Tampa are two of the elite like offensive teams in the league. Like Toronto is right now like 10th in the league in goals for per game, and then Tampa is 6th, like 3.38 compared to 3.43. So 0.05 goals per game is the difference between these guys, which is basically nothing. That's a few bounces and a few more games against bottom feeder teams.
Or top feeder teams if you're us. We don't score against those bottom feeders. all right. Well, let's move right along then to our... I didn't just call them all depth forwards. I'm calling these ones support forwards. So kind of like in between the other top six forwards who aren't quite on the same level as the big four. But for the Leafs, we have Yarncrook and O'Reilly. O'Reilly being our big deadline acquisition. We haven't seen too much of him. Yeah, he should be coming back real soon here, but Yarncrook's really come into his own on a line with Matthews up there recently. He's been real good. And for Tampa, we have Brandon Hagel and Anthony Cirelli. I didn't actually notice how good of a season Hagel was having until I looked it up. The guy has 27 goals and 32 assists, a 60-point season for Hagel. That was a pretty good pickup that they made a couple years ago. And then Zuccarelli is just your backstop third line center. He's just maybe he's a second line center actually. He's just so versatile. He's so noticeable when he's out there. So he's real good too.
Yeah, and what I think about pairings. Well, just a note on Brandon Hagel. I remember last year everyone gave like Tampa a hard time about giving up two first round picks for him because he only has a cap hit of like 1.5. And once again, Julian Breezebrod knows how to make a good trade. Although I'm not sure if he'll live to regret the Tanner Janot trade. We'll get there. But just looking at Hagel and Shirelli versus Yarncrook and Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly is hard to evaluate, especially in the same way. Like I feel Tampa does have the edge offensively for those two guys. Versus both, like, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly is I'm not sure. Maybe I was gonna say perennial Selke candidate, but I'm not sure if that's true. But at least like he's won like a Selke trophy. He's one of the elite defensive forwards in the NHL, while also getting older, while also still being somewhat of an effective offensive force. Meanwhile, Yarncrook is someone who, I would say like his 19 goals a season aren't fully representative of his full season. Like he started the year on like the third line playing with Pierre Engvall and David Kampf. Yep. That's not a line that racks up points. Nope. Like he's probably gotten more than half of his points in the past, like half of the year. So I don't think the gap between these two groups is that far off, offensively, and I do think the Leafs have quite an advantage defensively with those guys. The Leafs team is also interesting in how they're set up, and they have a lot more players that have a defined offensive role and then a defined defensive role. Meanwhile, the Tampa lineup is a little more balanced in that any one of their lines can be relied on to score, to put the puck in the net, while at the same time not be
I feel like victimized. What you're just describing there is exactly what Sheldon Keefe wants. Like and probably most coaches, they just want to be able to trust every single person they're putting on the ice. That's why Luke Shen is going to get the go ahead, and we'll talk about him a little bit here. That's why Luke Shen's going to get the go ahead over Timothy Liljegren, and that's why Matthew Nyes probably isn't going to crack this roster, because you're not just not going to be able to trust them in these games. And if you could put out 12 forwards and six defensemen and one goalie who you know isn't going to make some stupid mistake and let the other team get a freebie goal, that is something that we have not had over the past 5 years of playoffs here. So it's, I think that matters. And I think that between these two guys, O'Reilly and Yarncrook, I think we have that. I think that they're both exactly like O'Reilly, especially. We said it a lot when we were doing our trade deadline pods. When we just acquired him. He's exactly what we needed. He's playoff king. He's Mr. Clutch. He's Mr. Get It Done, you know, hard worker in the quarters, blue collar man. He's everything that we were short of on our team is what Ryan O'Reilly brings in spades. And I think that that's a huge piece that we've been missing in playoffs past.
Yeah. Well, and I think as well, like as we're comparing these guys, it comes to be more impactful that we've now number six forward for the Leafs we're comparing to the number five forward of Tampa. Like, yeah. I do think like the Leafs have at the high end, like the Leafs, I think have more depth and like more value of the forwards than Tampa. That's a bold statement, but I think it's true.
We have more quality forwards than Tampa. So we have like more quantity. Like, I mean, we started the list with three of them, credit Tampa's two, and been even ever since. So you're right. This is like the sixth Toronto versus the fifth Tampa.
Yeah, and granted, like, yeah, I mean, you start to be like splitting hairs. Like on Tampa, like Nick Paul is he's solid. Alex Killorn, solid.
No, they
Corey Perry, scumbag.
There's a bunch of scrubs over there. Just saying that I do agree. I think that up at this point, if I were to give the edge to one of the two teams, it's probably the Leafs, because that's the way that they're built, right? Like they're built here. We're here to figure out how much of an edge, because when we get to the defense and the goalies, I have a feeling that it's going to be tilted the other way in Tampa's favor. So we got to figure out, okay, well, how well do the Leafs? Do they barely have an edge? Do they have a wide margin here? I think in this support group, I'm going to say that the Leafs have a bit of a margin. I might be underestimating Sorelli. He's so good. Like, he's a real good player.
He's like a David Kampf on steroids.
That's exactly what he is. He's like a David Kampf who could, yeah, that's a great comparison. I wish, I don't know. I like Sorelli a lot. All right. This is the, this one is no fun talking about, Tim, but I got some stuff to say. Bunting and Perry, the pests, the annoyance, the rock in your shoe. That's what this group is. They're just the players that the other teams is going to hate. Like, everyone on Tampa is going to absolutely hate Bunting. Every Tampa fan is going to hate Bunting. Every Toronto fan already hates Corey Perry, and we're just going to hate him more.
I'm pretty sure everyone in the league hates Corey Perry.
Yeah, even his teammates, maybe. You never know. But you know what? As much as annoying as it is, it's a necessary part of hockey, especially when you get to the playoffs, to have a player like that. A player who's just going to rough it up, get under the other team's skin, drag your team into the fight, draw some penalties. It's, you need it. And both teams have it. What do you think?
I mean, if you had asked me a little while ago, I'd say like Michael Bunting might have the edge, but now it's like, the refs are giving him the Nazem Kadri treatment where he just stops getting the calls. So then he like tries harder to get the calls, which then doesn't impress anyone with his embellishment. And it's still, I think he's still drawing like some of like a lot of the penalties in the league, but now the refs are also giving him lots of penalties for some of his antics, which, I mean, a little frustrating that like seeing the kind of the inconsistencies where he'll get into a scrum and end up with the only penalty out of everyone. Like, it does feel like the refs are picking on him. Granted, do I respect his play of doing all that? I'm still like, nah.
Listen, I don't know. Bunting is probably going to get more points than Corey Perry in this series. Like, Bunting might be playing with Matthews and Marner. Perry's a fourth line player. So we're not really comparing offensive output here or like that. That stuff, Bunting is going to be better than 37-year-old Corey Perry, however old he is. But just that the ability to do like what this group is about, being the pest, being the agitator,
kicking players in the head.
It's all right, calm down there. Tim, I am so frustrated. I'm so frustrated with Michael Bunting. Last year he was great at walking the line. He just knew how to, I would watch him and I'd say, I don't know. I don't get it why the other teams hate this guy so much, but he's doing something out there, and they do, because he drew so many penalties. Other teams just hated the guy. This year, it's different. I can see clear as day why other teams hate him. He just whines the whole time. He's always complaining to the ref. He's diving all over the place. He's always taking penalties and like dry. He doesn't know how to do it anymore. He lost something. And I could just see it getting to the playoffs and the refs giving him nothing. I could just see the day where we finally get a power play. We're going to tie the game up. Oh, they also gave Bunting an embellishment call in the playoffs. Like, it's going to drive us nuts, this guy. So I've my stock in Bunting has gone way down, way down. I fully expect Corey Perry to win the pest award of the series. Because I don't think Bunting's going to be able to turn this around. I think he's lost the respect of the refs. And I don't really want to see him even come back to the Leafs next year, because I think that his time in Toronto has put too much of a spotlight on him, and people just know Bunting dives, he complains, we're not going to give him calls, and that's going to be him for the rest of his career now, until he goes to Arizona.
Back to Arizona?
Yep.
I think that's a bit of a bold statement. I wouldn't go that far to start looking at the summer and beyond. I would maybe question whether he's an eight-year kind of guy that is worth, what, $4 or $5 million a year. Who knows what team's going to throw a lot of money at him. But I do think, like, for this series, I mean, like, we're just kind of talking about, like, you've pulled out kind of the two most wanted players. But I think if you start looking at the players that are going to get under people's skin and, like, who's going to... sorry, I forget if this is a topic, but as far as like being rough and driving the play from that from that perspective of who's going to like dominate the play physically and like rattle the other team's cage, I think that's Tampa, like not close. Like, but both their, I mean, we mentioned his name earlier with Janot, but like that's exactly what Janot's like calling card is. Like, he's the nightmare to play against as far as getting under team skin. Who do we have? We have Wayne Simmons, who like gets 3 minutes of ice time and 4 minutes of penalties every game.
And
like,
don't get me started on Wayne Simmons. That guy is dead. All right. We brought in Liu Shen. Guy's gonna push Janot through the glass. Like, that's what we brought him in for. Like, I don't know if I would say that it's them by a wide margin. I do agree, because they also have Bellemare, right. Fourth line center. Like, he's also that kind of player. So even like Maroon, I remember, was annoying. So I don't know.
Ross Colton.
I think that they would definitely have the edge in that category. But I don't think that we're going into it with nothing. Like, in previous years, we were going into it without anyone who could do that stuff. And I think that we have a few people who can answer that bell every now and then.
Yeah, and I think props to Dubas. Like, I think he identified this was, like, a shortcoming. I don't know if he was looking specifically at Tampa. Probably. Like, and then Tampa, like, so I think the moves that he made, like, bringing in Noel Acciari. Like, Noel Acciari is a big factor in this conversation. And even like Ryan O'Reilly is certainly more of a physical player than, I mean, Pierre Engvall was like, we call him the giraffe. I think he had like the temperament of a giraffe as well.
Well, he was just a big nothing burger in the playoffs. Like, that's why he's gone. He just couldn't get anything to go on.
Couldn't get it done. But and then in response to that, Tampa's like, no, we like having the edge over this. Let's go spend our draft haul on this fourth line player who's going to like frustrate Leaf fans if nothing else.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, I do kind of fear about that though. Cause like the Leafs, like over the years, I would not describe them as a mentally strong team. And if I say, are they susceptible to people getting under their skin and throwing them off? 100% they are.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
It's like, you target a few guys, and it's like, oh, Corey Perry goes after Matthews. Matthews gives him like a little push, and the ref gives them coincidental minors because they like to raise Tim's blood pressure. And it's like, oh yeah, they trade 2 minutes of Corey Perry for 2 minutes of Austin Matthews, or even like 2 minutes of Michael Bunting. Like, anytime they get coincidental minors, like they're usually it's gonna be Tampa coming out ahead. It'll be very interesting to see how they ref this series. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be inconsistent because that's the staple with refereeing.
That's right. Okay, well, Tim, we already talked about a few of these players here and there, but just rounding out our forward group, we have Acciari, Lafferty, Austin Reese, Kerfoot, and Kampf. They have Nick Paul, Colton, Maroon, Killorn, and Janot. These are kind of your bottom six players. So you don't have to spend too much time talking about them. Just as a whole, you give one edge of the bottom six to the other, one or the other?
I do think both teams, like when I look at like the difference makers, I think of like it's the top of the lineup that are going to be the difference makers. But then it's scarred in my mind the game seven last year. Who was it that was scoring? It was Nick Paul that scored. Like, it was the bottom end of the lineup. So like for that reason alone, maybe I give Tampa the edge. Not to say that the Leafs have a bunch of nothings in their bottom six. I do like the pickups that we made there. And I think, we'll see where Ryan O'Reilly does slot in, like whether they is in the top with Tavares or whether they go for a deeper lineup and play him in the third line. And if he does play on the third line, that is kind of a big factor for getting scoring out of that bottom group. Alex Kerfoot, he's now no longer a black hole. He's just
That's right. I think I'm actually leaning towards Toronto on this one. Maybe it's just because I don't know the bottom end of the Tampa guy lineup as well, but I love Acciari and Lafferty. Like, those are two quality pickups that we made. Austin Reese has been great all season. Like, he came in as on a PTO, and here he is on our team.
Great.
He's an NHL player, which is more than what we could say for basically our entire fourth line last playoff. So yeah, he's a great fourth liner, I would say. So you don't have to be You don't have to be called great only because you're on the first or second line. You can be a great fourth liner. I think he's a great fourth liner.
He's been like in and out of the lineup. I'd say he probably deserves to be in and out of
the lineup. He has not been in and out of the lineup. He's how many games has he been healthy scratch? The only time he's out is if he's like injured or something.
I don't know. How many games has he played here?
Either way, we all know that we love Camp, and Kerfoot's a playoff guy. He's been better in the playoffs than he has in the regular season the last couple of years. So I'm hoping that
He's played 71 games.
Thank you. So he's clearly an NHL player. Listen, last year we barely lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Barely.
And I know, Wes McCauley stole it from us.
Our fourth line in particular this year is night and day compared to our fourth line last year. Night and day. It's not even close.
What, Clifford, Simmons, and Spezza?
Last year, it was just a waste of a line. And this year, like, I'm expecting things of our fourth line. I think that's everything. So I'm excited about what our bottom six brings. All right, let's move along because I don't want you accusing me of forgetting our defense here. Right off the top, because this is where things kind of shift, because we're starting with Hedman and Sergachev with the Tampa Bay Lightning compared to, although I don't think this is going to be our pair that we're going for, but we're going to just say Riley and Brody. You could also say McCabe and Brody if you want to just call that our top pair, but Riley, Brody, McCabe, Brody, at the end of the day, it's just less than Victor Hedman and insert name here. Now, well, Hedman's like, had kind of an off season. He hasn't been the Norris Trophy winner that he's been in seasons past, but it's still Victor Hedman, right?
It's still Victor Hedman, and to be like him and Sergachev play on different pairs. They both play the left.
Yeah, well, so is Riley and Brody, so we're good.
There you go. I mean, this one, I think Victor Hedman can dictate play when he's out there, like unlike anyone else. Like he is that physical factor that can that you put him up against any lines, and that line is going to be noticeably harder to score. Like you put him out there and he is your elite defenseman, right? Like he's the bona fide number one defenseman. Leafs don't have that. Nope. They don't. They have Morgan Riley, who is the offensive half of a number one defenseman, but then is a black hole defensively, at least most of this year. At best, he's an average NHL defender, but more commonly he's below average and relies on TJ Brody, who's an elite NHL defender. Has he scored a goal this year? I forget.
Yeah, I think he's scored a couple. It is tough. I mean, we've seen it before where like Hedman, he's so big, he's so dominant out there. He's the guy who's gonna he's gonna be on the ice for the last 60 seconds, no matter if they're winning or they're losing, because he's the guy that they want to have out there. We don't have a defenseman like that. We do not have anyone like Victor Hedman on our team. That could be a difference maker here. It does make me feel a little better that he's having a down year. But if I know one thing about any one of the Tampa Bay Lightning, that if they're going to turn it on and become a Norris player again, it's going to be in the playoff time. So he's definitely a big factor there.
Yeah.
The other D, actually, I don't actually know two of the defensemen on Tampa. Perbix and Radish, I think you pronounce it. Then Cole and Cernak, and then
Eric Cernak is pretty good.
Yeah, I like Cole and Cernak. I just didn't know Perbix and Radish really. But then we have Geo Hall and McCabe, and I put in Shen because I do think he's going to be the guy in there. I think it's a bit of a toss up. You never know what you're going to get for Hall and Shen. I think we'll only play like 7 or 8 minutes on the night. So I don't really have too many thoughts about the bottom edge of the defenseman, other than probably as a whole to D, just give it to Tampa for Hedman effect. But do you have any thoughts on that?
I think one note as far as the defensemen are they're in and out of the lineup. The what's his name? Radish is more of a recent addition. Zach Bogosian has played 43 games with Tampa year. They've kind of had a rotating last spot in there between. By committee, so we do like Zach Bogosian as far as a physical factor, but he's getting older.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was gonna say, as far as the Tampa defensemen go, like they certainly have the edge with the top pairs, but like Hedman, he is capable of shutting down our stars. Sergachev, his pairing is gonna be elite. It's gonna come down to like the depth guys though are gonna have opportunities against. I say third pairing, I think it does fall off there to some extent, but
I do time, think like what I enjoy about the Leafs bottom guys there, like Gio Hall, McCabe Shen, all four of those guys could box out the net. You know, like last year we were looking at guys like Liljegren and Sandin, just Bandon. like smaller, they just couldn't do it. And it showed, or just get like out muscled, and then all of a sudden they have control on our end. We got some big defensemen, big strong defensemen down there, I think that will make it'll make a difference. It'll be a different feel this year for a back end than it was last year.
Yep. No, we'll see. I mean, I think we've kind of combined talking about the top D with the depth D as well in here, but I do think the Leafs are a little more well-rounded when it comes to defensemen, as far as having, like, Jake McCabe is kind of a number three. He's been pretty impressive so far this year. I think that it'll be very interesting to see what Keefe does at home. Like, I could see him going out of his way to try and get the Matthews line out against not Victor Hedman.
Yeah.
When Keefe has last change. I don't know if when Tampa has last change, if they're going to care.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure maybe like TJ Brody. I mean, as much as we love TJ Brody and he's fantastic and we wish we could have six TJ Brodies on our defensive pairs, he's not at the level that other team forwards are avoiding him, I don't think. He's not your...
I think the difference is, like you mentioned it earlier, that it's our forwards that they're going to be targeting, because unlike them, we have forwards that are all-out offense and all-out defense. And if we have a top line of Matthews, Marner, Yarncrook, and then a second line of Bunting, Tavares, and Nylander, 100% Cooper's going to be trying to get Kucherov and Point and Stamkos out against that Bunting, Tavares,
Nylander line,
because that line, like, Keith is going to be trying to bury in the offensive zone. So if you do it something like that, like, it's going to be that kind of targeting that Cooper's going to be doing. Not so much our defense, because you're right, we don't really have that. I mean, I guess if you have a pair of Brody, McCabe, you know, that's a pretty stout defensive pair that you're going to be trying to avoid there.
Yeah, and we haven't talked too much about forward. Maybe that's next week. We'll look a little more into the line by line what we expect after O'Reilly comes back and you see where he slots in. But
yeah.
I think like Bunting, Tavares, and Nylander doesn't, like, they're fine defensively, but certainly no defensive stalwart. They're
not that good offensively. They're less
not that good. Like that's why we said, like,
all offense line.
Yeah, well, that's why we said, like, oh, maybe Marner plays down on that Tavares line to balance it out, or maybe if O'Reilly's on that line, then he's that staple. Yep. Just to, so I do think we see different lines for home and on the road, but it'll be quite interesting to see what Keith comes up with, and I'm sure we'll see about 20 different line combinations in the playoffs. So,
well, let's get into that then, Tim. Keith versus Cooper. You know, we got a coaching matchup. We've seen Keith. What he did, I guess he started with Columbus. So this will be Keefe's fourth playoff appearance. This will be Cooper's 44th playoff appearance. And is there any reason to say that Keefe will be the better coach this playoff series? Or is it just it's Cooper?
I mean, it's hard to look past playoff experience, and the playoff rings on his hand speak pretty loudly. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I think is interesting from an X factor perspective, maybe not this year as much, but how much does desire to win and like hunger come into play? As I mean, like, players, you can see it. Coaching, you can only will so much, but I mean, like, I think the players can somewhat feed off the energy. Like, do you think Sheldon Keefe, I mean, we've seen him get pretty animated this season. He's not always your calm, cool, collective presence behind the bench.
What gives me hope is the I guess blip a couple weeks ago where Cooper had to bench all three of his stars for a full period. It was Point and Stamkos and Kucherov all of them did not touch the ice for a full period of play, right in the middle of their downward spiral, and it didn't get any better for a few games after that. And it was in that moment I thought, is Cooper losing the room? Because you know what? I bet it's a long ride, I assume, to the Stanley Cup Finals. And to do that 1 year, and then again the next year, and the year after that, and now here's season four of they're going to try and do it again. Like, you got to think that Cooper's just in their ear, like, for a lot of that playoff stretch. And you just got to be thinking, like, buddy, I don't know. I wonder if it's, you can only go so long. And I think Cooper is arguably the best there is, right? At least in the game right now. I'd be hard-pressed to find a coach that I think is better than Cooper. But he's had a long run with this team, and they've done a lot of things. And I don't know. I like Keefe. I think that he makes smart moves. I think he's gotten better every single year that we've seen him. We were so close last year. We were so close. And I think our team is better. It's tough to say that Keefe's going to be better than Cooper, but I think Keefe will be better than Keefe was last year. I'll say that.
Yeah. Yep. No, and I think that's agree. Like, I'm not going to, I think you have your head in the sand to say that Toronto has an edge in the coaching department. But I don't think, we can talk about special teams a bit and the coach's impact on that, but
we'll get into
we'll
it.
See. I hope, I sure hope Keefe, I don't know how, like, coach can win or lose the series. I know, like, at times, I remember there's some series where they just lost the line matching thing and they just lose themselves.
I feel like it was those years against Boston with Babcock that was just like, yeah, we just had the worst coach. Like, that, those ones seem more obvious. But the other half of coaching is special teams, playoff or power play and penalty kill. I said it earlier, I'm feeling good about our power play. I don't really know too much about the team stats. Maybe you could speak to those regarding Tampa versus Toronto, but we've just been so consistent and we have so many different looks we could throw out there. We talked about our big guns. We have so many of them that we can throw out there. Even power play two, who doesn't have our big guns on it, has looked good this year. So I'm feeling good about our power play. What are those stats?
The consistency is really nice. Like, I know the 1 year we were like, we'd be hot for 10 games and cold for 10 games and hot for 10 games and then cold and then the playoffs and then we lose. This year, no, it has, I'm not sure if there's been more than like a 3-game stretch where, like, I mean, Leafs still earn as like fewer, like some of the fewest penalties in the league, which is ridiculous because the referees all hate us, but then, you know, that's a,
we have
that's
the
a
single
different
player who has more than any other player in the league, but as a team we have the fewest. Does anyone else take penalties other than Wayne Simmonds and Michael Bunting?
I don't know, but looking at even just like the power play and penalty kill effectiveness, Edmonton is like head and shoulders above anyone else in the NHL.
They're having like a record-breaking year, aren't they? It's seriously
It's not close. Edmonton's the best power play in the league, but Leafs are second in the NHL with their power play percentage.
There you go.
That being said, Tampa is fifth in the league. So both Toronto and Tampa are getting by on elite power plays.
On the
penalty kill, both sides are middling, actually. What is that? 1, 2, 3. Toronto is 14 and Tampa Bay is 15. So they're back to back. So closer to average penalty killers. But definitely the power play is, we talked about with like the big forwards that go out there, right? Those are the difference makers. Those are the ones that can score at will when they want to. So they're just getting all the power play time and they make the most of it. So Wayne Simmonds, I don't want to see him at all in the playoffs. And if he does take a penalty, I don't want him in the city.
Well, we've had the lesser power play every playoff series that I can remember as a man. Like, we just never have the better power play. And we always lose. So it's just so big. It's so hard to get goals in the playoffs. Like, games are won 3-2, 2-1, 1-0 if you're the Islanders. Like, that's the way playoff games are won. And if you can get a power play goal, which is the easiest way to score goals, that's everything. I am concerned. I feel like we let in a shorthanded goal every single playoffs as well. And we still have a fairly aggressive power play that will allow a shorthanded goal now and then. Yeah. Sometimes we have Morgan Riley as your backstop back there.
It'll be interesting, though. Like, the NHL has the highest scoring this year than any other, like, past year going back to, like, the 80s and 90s, basically.
Yeah.
Like, what makes it crazy, like, even 5 or 6 years ago, Jamie Benn won the Art Ross with 87 points. That's basically how many points Connor McDavid had at the All-Star break.
That's, like, half of what his total is going to be. Not even. That's wild. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, I think that we've never won a series because of our power play, and we could win the series this year because of our power play. I mean, you said it, Tampa also has a really good power play, and typically your penalty kill is only as good as your goalie, as Steven would say, and they definitely have the better goalie. But
yep,
I mean, I like it. I like our pieces out there. I like Tavares. I like Bunting. Matthews is coming into form. Nylander's always good. Marner just is magic. Like, I'm feeling good.
Feeling good, except for the elephant in the room, the one player that has the ability to wipe away everything that we've talked about, top to bottom, the Andre Vasilevskiy factor. Definitely haven't been having nightmares about this all year.
Well, I saved it for last because it's the biggest gap. Like, the thing, there's some things that we have a little better, and there's some things that Tampa has a little better. And as much as we love Samsonov, because he's been great, it's Andre Vasilevskiy. And if we lose, it's probably going to be because of Andre Vasilevskiy. If we win, it will be a very hard-fought battle against Andre Vasilevskiy. He's so good, and he just wins. When it's like a game that we can put it away, a game that's an elimination game, he lets in one goal max. And that's ridiculous. Like, how do you beat that?
Yeah. He's just the goalie that when your team needs a save, he gives you that save.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to look at how many goals he let in before. It's like, if he says, like, all right, we're going OT, the puck stops here, it's just a matter of time before your team scores, and it's not going to be on Andre Vasilevskiy.
And you could tell that the Leafs were excited about Matt Murray because he's done it. He's won the cup 2 times, and he's proven to be a better playoff goaltender than even a regular season goaltender. Like, his stats and his performance speaks a lot to that. We're assuming, we don't know this, but we're assuming we're going in with Ilya Samsonov. He has 0 playoff games. This will be his first playoff game that he's about to play, compared to Andre Vasilevskiy, who's played like 64 in the last 5 years. So it's
like as many regular season games as Samsonov has played.
Yeah, really though. I don't know. It makes me really nervous. And I like Samsonov a lot. I think he's earned the crease at this point. I wouldn't even bat an eye if you told me that we win the first series and Samsonov was great and a big part why we won. Like, that makes perfect sense, because he's been a big part why we win so many games this year, especially at home. It's just Andre Vasilevskiy.
Ilya Samsonov has played 8 playoff games in his career.
With Washington?
3 in 2020 and 5 in 2021.
All right, so it's been a hot minute then.
It's been a little bit. And I mean, like, he wasn't posting Andre Vasilevskiy numbers. He had an 899 and then a 912. So
okay. All right. Well, Jim thinks that Curtis Joseph is the e-bug, and I think Samsonov hasn't played any games. Which one of these two is the greater transgression? I say it's Tim.
Ryan, that's getting edited out of the pod. Yours not. I think, like, the same way that Andre Vasilevskiy is one of the closest non-question marks, like, as close thing you get to a sure thing in goaltending, Ilya Samsonov and Matt Murray are some of the biggest question marks that I would say that, I mean, certainly that we had going into the season, but, and then over the season, I think Ilya Samsonov has quelled a lot of the doubts, but it's still comes down to of the playoffs are a different beast, and when there will be no greater pressure than those 7 games, because it will be 7 games.
Well, speaking of that, Tim, we all know how it's going to go. You know, we were talking about We have to predict how many games the Leafs are going to win it in, because obviously we're both predicting they're going to win. But we know it's going to go to seven games. So instead, Tim, who do you think will score the game-winning goal in Game 7 for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
For the Toronto Maple Leafs. It has to be Toronto Maple Leafs, yes. No, I think as we've gone through each one of these levels, that's been very close. Maybe edge one way or edge the other way. And, like, goaltending, I mean, look past the goaltending. I do think that it is going to be a close series. I know we joke about Game 7 just because it's always Game 7, but I don't think it's that far-fetched. I think as far as who's going to score the game-winning goal, let me go check the players I drafted in my playoff draft a couple pods ago. Give me William Nylander. That guy, he can score when he wants to score. He's going to solve what's his name? Vasilevskiy.
Well, I mean, Steven, he picked John Tavares. We asked him this question. He wasn't able to be here today, but he picked John Tavares, which is, that's the captain. That's not a bad pick at all. But I just have to say, you're both wrong. The correct answer is David Kampf is scoring the game-winning goal in Game 7. He scores all the biggest goals, and it's going to be some greasy goal from the crease that's going to beat Vasilevskiy. You know it's true, Tim.
The man does not score unimportant goals.
That's right. David Kampf is going to bring us into the promised lands, known as TD Gardens against Boston Bruins.
If he does that, I think I can have to buy a David Kampf jersey.
If he does that, we'll all buy David Kampf jerseys. It's done.
I thought about picking Noel Achari.
That's funny. I almost picked Achari, actually. That's funny.
He can be a difference maker.
No one's picking Matthew Sabriner, I guess. They could take that out of spite, and they could do it anyway, because they were the
opposite. Yes. Let light a fire under them and prove us wrong.
Well, Tim, we're coming to a close here. Playoff preview. Final thoughts. You feeling good? After we did this little exercise, we matched them up. How confident are you? Now, how many buckets are you sweating?
I mean, I look at it and I say, like, the Leafs can win this series. This is a winnable series for the Leafs, but they can take nothing for granted. In the years past, they've had, like, a game, multiple periods where they've taken it off. They can't afford that. If they want to win this series, they have to show up every single night. They can't dig themselves a hole. They have their work cut out for them anyways. But that being said, like, I think this is the best Leafs team that we've seen in the past, the Auston Matthews era. And I want to see, I'm excited to see how they do. I mean, I think the past like couple months, I've been ready to kind of move on to playoffs to get the stakes, the games that matter. Like, this is what we've done built up the whole year to be.
I really like this Leafs team. I really like it. Like, you just go top to bottom, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, aces, all of them. Our new acquisitions of O'Reilly and Lafferty and Achari, McCabe, great. Just across the board. I can't even tell you. O'Reilly's been my guy for like a full calendar year. Like, I love this guy that he's on our team. Samsonov is good. Like, I think he'll be, I don't think if we lose, it won't be because of Samsonov. I don't think. I think he'll at least be good. And it's just going to be tough. It's Tampa Bay, but I really like our team. I think we have a better chance of winning this year than we had last year. And I really liked our team last year too. So I'm feeling pretty good. I think at the very least, it will yet again be another close and hard-fought series. We're going to win at least three games, and it's going to be a fun and stressful time. So can't come fast enough.
Count down the days. What games do we have coming up to finish off the series? Oh, we still have to face Boston this week.
This week we do, yeah. First we face Columbus, I believe, and then we face Boston. And to end off the week, our last game of the season against Montreal, which will be a bloodbath against us. These end games are weird.
It's not last game of the season.
Game against Montreal. Like, it's the last one. I was going to say, these games are weird at the end of the season, because The Leafs aren't playing for anything. We even have our who we're playing in the first round locked up at this point.
Montreal's playing for home ice advantage.
Montreal's not playing for anything. Like, they're not making the playoffs. They're just going to come out and be guns a-blazing because they're like, we're going to stick it to these guys one last time before we pack our golf bags. So I don't know. I don't like this game against Montreal. I don't like the game against Florida. I don't like any of the games. I just want to get there because I'm terrified we're going to have more players get injured.
I know, Will. That's the injury. Like each game, I don't care. Oh, actually, if we lost like 8 games in a row to go into the playoffs, I might care. But like each game, if we play fine and don't get injured, that's a win for me.
A win. That's the win.
That's a win. So we play Tampa on April 11th. It might be like that game decides like home ice advantage. That'd be crazy.
I tell you, I think it's really important that we get home. Just like mentally for the guys, for Samsonov, whose home ice record is like 23-2. It's unbelievable. And I think it's important. Start the series off in Toronto. Don't start it in Tampa and get them a couple of games.
I
think we'll keep it. We have a bit of a lead on them here, but I really hope.
Exciting times. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we will update next week if anything new happens for us to talk about as we are on the dawn, get closer to the dawn of the 2023 playoffs.
Great.
See you next week.